This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker. Let's begin today with the intensifying debate in Massachusetts and across the country about accepting Syrian refugees into the U.S.
In the wake of the Paris attacks, more than half of the nation's governors, including Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, expressed concerns about allowing Syrian refugees into their states.
Governor Baker's comments sparked protests on Boston Common, including this one Friday night, where refugee advocates admonished Governor Baker.
Also on Friday, Governor Baker did not join 27 Republican governors who sent a letter to President Obama asking him to suspend the government's Syrian refugee resettlement program.
And yesterday, Baker seemed to soften his position.
Look, Massachusetts has a long and storied history as an engaged and active participant in refugee resettlement, and I believe in that and I support it. My issue is I'm just looking for some answers from the federal government, which we're currently engaged in what I'm hoping is going to be a productive and serious debate about some of the issues that people have raised on both sides about the vetting process.
Governor Charlie Baker speaking yesterday in Boston. For some perspective on this issue, we're joined now by Sasha Chanoff. He's co-founder and executive director of Refuge Point. That's a refugee settlement agency based in Cambridge. And Sasha, it's good to have you back on the program. Welcome.
Thanks, Anthony. Great to be here.
Before I talk to you, I do want to just tell our listeners, we did reach out to Governor Baker to ask him specifically what questions he has about the vetting process. He was unavailable. But Sasha, your response to concerns about the vetting process, we're hearing a lot about them across the country. Given what happened in Paris, are they justified?
I don't think they're justified. I think the response that we're seeing across the country is based in fear. I don't think it's based in an understanding of the extraordinary rigor and extensive security backgrounds and other vetting processes that go into the refugee resettlement program the U.S. has.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, so pretend you're talking to someone who has concerns. We've seen these ghastly images from around the world, airliners being shot down, the attacks in Paris. And so I might be someone who says, yeah, we got to be careful about who we let into this country.
Oh, we absolutely do. And, you know, the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program has brought in more than 3 million refugees since the 1980 Refugee Act. There are extensive security checks in place. There's an extensive vetting process in place. Perhaps I'll start with that that vetting process. Before a refugee is even introduced for consideration into the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program, when I say we, I mean humanitarians out there, or why don't I be specific? The UN Refugee Agency works hand in hand with the State Department to hand-pick refugees who should be considered for resettlement. Their criteria that are used, those include people who are in physical danger in the countries to which they fled. They include people who are survivors of violence and torture. They include orphans and unaccompanied children, among other resettlement criteria. So we as humanitarians get to know these refugees well. You know, there are many millions of refugees in the world, nearly 20 million refugees in the world right now. And only a very small fraction of those, less than 1%, will have access to a resettlement program. And we know that we have to take extraordinary precautions to select the right people for these programs. So that selection process, even before they get to the U.S. resettlement consideration process, means that the humanitarians out there are seeing people on a daily basis in the refugee camps and the urban centers to which they fled. We get to know them. We see them in the food ration lines. We see them in the hospitals. We see them as we go about our daily business. Some of those people's concerns rise to the top. We see that somebody has been significantly traumatized by violence or they have been tortured. They tell us these things, but we don't just take their word for it. We go to their homes. We visit them. If we're thinking about resettlement, we do surprise home visits. We carefully talk to people around them. We get to know them often over the course of years. And once we feel certain that this person, let's say it's an unaccompanied girl who's 15 years old, who's been raped and whose parents have been killed, once we feel certain that she needs resettlement as a life-saving measure, it's at that point that the UN Refugee Agency writes up an extensive dossier of this person. Mm. That dossier means that essentially there's an extensive interview that lasts many hours where we talk to that person. If that person has a family, we often talk to all the family members. Sometimes to verify stories, we separate family members and talk to each of them individually. And we put together an extensive dossier that takes many hours.
I just want to jump in here, though, because I'm wondering, does this system that you're describing, does it fall apart in the case of what we're seeing in Europe, where you basically have floods of refugees crossing borders sometimes that are relatively unmonitored?
It's a great question. There is absolutely no comparison between the mass migration of refugees and immigrants coming into Europe and the careful selection process of the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program. Perhaps because of geography, we have the fortune to be extraordinarily thoughtful and selective. Again, we handpick the people who have access to consideration in the resettlement process.
And then once they get to the U.S., they go through a whole nother set of vetting processes, right?
Once they are selected for consideration, and I've just gone through some of the details of that selection process, they go through extensive interviews and vetting, and we put together a case dossier. That case dossier that the UN Refugee Agency puts together actually is used by many countries to resettle refugees without any additional interviews. Some countries do dossier-based resettlement, which means that they completely trust the UN Refugee Agency's extensive vetting. That's not the case with the U.S. resettlement program. We have our own very particular American process that starts once we get that dossier.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of tape from FBI Director James Comey, who was talking about that he's worried about gaps in the vetting process. So here he is in a House Judiciary Committee here in late October.
The risk is that someone who is a blank slate to us will be vetted by us in a process that's efficient and complete, but will show no sign of anything because they've never crossed our radar screen. That's why I describe it as a process that's gotten a lot better, but that we can't tell you is risk-free.
So it's not risk-free. I mean, do you agree with that concern that he raised?
Any visa process to the U.S., whether it be tourists, business, from any country in the world, I would say is not risk-free, including homegrown terror. We can't, by laws or any other means, completely protect ourselves from homegrown terror. I think that's not the right question. I think the right question is, what security systems are in place? What is the selection process? And how can we be certain that we are protected during this process? And so that process is actually extensive. Once a dossier comes to us, the first step is that there are three face-to-face interviews with a Department of State contractor where different people meet with the refugee in question. Again, let's take the example of an orphaned young girl whose parents have been killed. They meet with that person. They collect data and their story of persecution and other information. And that's three separate interviews so that they can compare information and make sure that the vetting process comes at it from many different points of view. After that, the case is sent for U.S. government security clearances. These clearances since 9/11 have become extensive. They include from the Department of Defense, from the Department of Homeland Security, from the FBI, and from multiple intelligence agencies. This process can take many years.
Sasha, I want to ask you, as an advocate, as a refugee advocate, I want to ask you about the kinds of people we're talking about when we talk about Syrian refugees. I know you must have thought about this.
Yeah, we're talking about children who've lost their parents. We're talking about people who have suffered the kind of violence that we saw in Paris. They've suffered the kind of violence that we experienced here in Boston with the Marathon bombing. They've gone through this horrific violence, and they are seeking safety. And Anthony, I would say that, you know, I feel that it's not only a moral imperative to protect those whose lives have been torn apart by violence and persecution. Many of them are women and children. But this isn't just about us protecting them. I would say it's about America's leadership in the world. Our resettlement program sustains our moral leadership in a world suffering savage assaults on the values that we treasure most: liberty, justice, equality. We are the primary guardians of those values. And so we aren't just protecting Syrian refugees because it's a moral imperative. We're doing it because we have to fight against this terror. We have to uphold those values in the world. And when we continue to open our doors for Syrians who are highly vetted, who come here fleeing the terror that we are trying to prevent in the world. We are doing what's right and what's needed. We're not just doing it for them. We're doing it for ourselves.
All right. Well, that's Sasha Chanoff. He's executive director and co-founder of Refuge Point, in a refugee resettlement agency based in Cambridge. Sasha, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony.